It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer.
We are one nation. We are one people. And our time for change has come.
It's early 2008 in Des Moines, Iowa. Then Senator Barack Obama has just won the Iowa caucuses. Fast forward to the present. In just 10 days, Barack Obama's presidency will end. In fact, tonight he gives his farewell address to the nation. Today, after 8 years under Obama's leadership, we ask, what's been achieved? What will endure? What failed? What will be the legacy of America's 44th president? Later on in the program, Lori Chesser joins us, chair of immigration, the Immigration Department at Davis Brown Law Firm in Des Moines. Also later, political scientist Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa to join us, joins us to talk about the political aspects of the Obama presidency. How will you remember Obama's time in office? What words of goodbye do you have for the president? We have a conversation going on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Are you bidding Obama a fond farewell or good riddance? And glad we're moving on. Join our conversation. In 6 words or less, what is your goodbye to President Obama? Or you can join us by phone, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, as I mentioned. You can tweet us as well at IPR Talk. My first guest for the hour is Jessica Welburn, Assistant Professor of Sociology and African American Studies at the University of Iowa. Jessica, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
When you sum up Barack Obama's legacy for, as a sociologist, as a scholar of American studies, when his legacy is looked at for our society, what do you think of most?
Well, I think of a couple of things. First, I think about the symbolic impact that he's had for the country as a whole, specifically for people of color. A couple of years ago, I wrote a paper with a sociologist named Cassie Pittman, who's at Case Western, and we interviewed working class and middle class African Americans about their thoughts on President Obama and the impact they felt he had on perhaps their social mobility prospects. And they talked a lot about how Obama symbolized to them the possibility that African Americans can overcome systemic inequality in the U.S. So while they believe that racism and discrimination continue to exist, that economic inequality is a big issue for African Americans, they also believe that President Obama shows to them the possibilities for African Americans. And so I think that impact has been huge for the African American community, but for members of many different groups. So I think that's part of it.
Does that symbolism that you mentioned there, does that translate into real benefits for African Americans and benefit to our society in terms of getting rid of inequality?
Sure, I think it does. I think that you can't underestimate the impact of seeing an African-American president, seeing an African-American family in the White House for the past 8 years, because I think it shows to people that they have a right to want to be included, fully included in American society, and that they deserve full inclusion. So I think that is one impact of the symbolism. I also believe President Obama has had a number of important practical impacts on the daily lives of people through legislation and through other initiatives that he has promoted.
Mm-hmm. As a sociologist, what questions do you have? Have you looked at, perhaps pondered, not necessarily researched over the last 8 years of his presidency? Do you feel are out there and perhaps debated, perhaps not settled, but continue to be debated about his presidency?
I think that this issue of symbolism is a big one. So there are a number of things that I think some, particularly more progressive individuals had hoped he would accomplish in terms of immigration reform, in terms of ameliorating racial inequality, perhaps reform when it comes to mass incarceration or economic inequality, the black-white wealth gap, things like that, that I think folks had hoped to see that we didn't quite get there under the Obama presidency. So there is a debate about whether or not, you know, he did enough and whether or not, again, he is simply a symbolic president. As I said, I think the symbolism in and of itself means a lot, but I also think he has accomplished a lot policy-wise that over time will realize what a significant impact it
had. Of course,
it
takes a while for a legacy to shape after someone is out of office. But some would argue, to your point, Jessica, that there is it feels like there is more racial tension now or during the Obama presidency than prior to the Obama presidency. Do you see that side of it? Do you agree with that?
I don't think that's the case at all. I think that having an African-American president has brought to the surface long-standing racial tensions in the U.S. And I think it's not just been the fact that we have an African-American president, but some of the things that have gone along with that. For instance, some of his appointments to African-American attorneys general. We've had Sonia Sotomayor appointed to the Supreme Court. We have had the White House opened up literally to many people from different backgrounds. I mean, we've seen Kendrick Lamar there. We've seen Stevie Wonder there. We've seen the Presidential Medal of Freedom go to so many different types of people over the past 8 years. And so I think in a number of ways, all of a sudden, tensions started to really come to the surface because people from backgrounds who may have concerns about increasing diversity in the U.S. all of a sudden saw it on a daily basis and were forced to think about it and come to terms with it in ways that perhaps they had not been before President Obama was elected. Mm-hmm.
So you feel we're better off now that we know what you would say was hidden, that it's more out in the open. We know the challenges, the racial challenges we have to face better than we did before.
I definitely think we're better off. We've seen a lot more, I think, progressive activism over the past 8 years. I think as Obama has progressed in his presidency, we've seen, you know, people from different backgrounds really feel that they have the opportunity to take agency over their circumstances, to become involved in the political process. And so while there are racial tensions, again, that I don't think are new, but perhaps have boiled to the surface, I think there are a lot of people that feel much more empowered to confront those racial inequalities and those tensions and to fight for progressive change.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, race aside, skin color aside, when you look at Barack Obama as a president, as a person, Obama's campaign, his presidency has felt different. I don't think there's any denying that than previous modern presidents. Can you explain in your words how you feel this president is different for our society, feels different, operates different in that office?
Definitely. I think that for me, I don't think that I'll see another president like Obama in my lifetime, and that he is a very relatable person. I think that the person that you often see on television or that you hear giving talks is the person that he really seems to be, and not only him, but his family. And so there are different aspects of his life that people from all walks of life can relate to. For me, sometimes I look at him and think he seems like somebody I might have gone to college with, or Michelle Obama seems like somebody I might have known. You know, they have a personality that just sort of like connects with people. And so I think that that's, to me, has been very significant about him. Again, he's just a very sort of down-to-earth, likable person. And I think regardless of political views, I think that's been hard for people to deny.
Mm-hmm. As a young African-American academic yourself, did you draw inspiration from the Obamas?
I certainly did. Again, so I got my PhD at Harvard, so having gone there, you know, years after they went there, it's, you know, again, they seem very much like people I might have been had the opportunity to meet there. And as a result, people that I've been able to look up to look at, to both President Obama and Michelle Obama, and to think about just the amazing amount that they've accomplished in their lives, even before President Obama was elected. I mean, Michelle Obama, you know, being a Harvard-educated mm-hmm. African-American woman lawyer. President Obama also, you know, being a lawyer, being a professor. They've both just accomplished a tremendous amount, even had he not been president. They're tremendous role models.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this matters to how African-Americans are treated in this country, to have such role models, Michelle Obama, Barack Obama, the two daughters?
I think that it provides people who perhaps don't have a lot of idea about what life is like for African Americans, don't know a lot of African Americans, perhaps provides them with some insight into Black life in the U.S. that they didn't have before. And so hopefully that will translate into African Americans being treated more positively in some ways, or people understanding at least that there are a multitude of Black experiences in the U.S., and that's one thing that the Obamas have also shown us. You know, often we get monolithic images of Black life in the U.S. through the TV, through the news, and the Obamas have shown us that, you know, African Americans do so many things, have contributed so many things to this country, and hopefully, you know, that will have an impact on how people think about people of color in the country.
If you just joined us, Jessica Welburn is with us, Assistant Professor of Sociology and African American Studies at the University of Iowa. Today we're talking about President Obama's legacy, 10 days from the end of his final administration. What words of goodbye do you have for President Obama? Our Facebook page, six words or less, say your goodbye to President Obama. Luann on our Facebook page writes, "Oh, Captain, my Captain, live long." Join us with your words. Perhaps it's not a fond farewell. Perhaps it's a good riddance and glad we're moving on. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Jessica Welburn with us. Also joining us now, Lori Chesser, Chair of the Immigration Department at Davis Brown Law Firm in Des Moines, joining us by phone. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on. When you look at this through the lens of immigration, of course, when Obama came into the presidency, immigration has been a longstanding challenge for this country. When it comes to immigration, Obama's actions are, I guess, hard to put squarely in one category or another. Even Donald Trump has praised him for how many people were deported during his presidency. How would you sum up his legacy when it comes to immigration?
Well, I think it's mixed, really. You know, when he was elected, I think that people had a lot of hope that we had an administration that would treat immigrants with compassion as human beings, kind of the relatability that Professor Welburn just spoke about, and that would recognize the value of our immigrant history and the value that immigrants bring. And so we did see that in certain actions. I mean, probably one of the most high-profile actions was the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, you know, the DREAM, as we call them, the DREAM Act kids that could get work permits and register with the government. And that was, you know, a real common sense approach that because legislation unfortunately didn't go, we, you know, he did take this common sense approach and did this.
Lori, let me break in here so we can hear President Obama on November 20th, 2014, announcing this executive action to reshape the nation's immigration system.
Sure.
The actions I'm taking are not only lawful, they're the kinds of actions taken by every single Republican president and every single Democratic president for the past half century. And to those members of Congress who question my authority to make our immigration system work better, or question the wisdom of me acting where Congress has failed, I have one answer. Pass a bill. I want to work with both parties to pass a more permanent legislative solution. And the day I sign that bill into law, the actions I take will no longer be necessary.
Okay, so Lori, explain this. This is what is known as DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals.
Mm-hmm.
And it did what again? Remind us.
Well, it allowed people who had been brought to the U.S. as children who met certain requirements, you know, to come forward, register, provide their address and all their information, and in return for that, they would get a 2-year work permit. It wasn't permanent residence. It wasn't any kind of legal status. It's just a work permit. And it's been working really well. So I think that will be something that, although there certainly is controversy around the way it was done in terms of the substance of what was done, it's something that has been supported, you know, to give these dreamer kids, as we call them, to give them some way to fully integrate in our society and our workforce, has been something supported by others, including our own Senator Grassley, way back when it was proposed many years ago as a way to get permanent residence. So, you know, that was a bold move, and that was something that I think was really a good idea when we stepped back from sort of the controversies about executive action. It was really a good idea.
As chair of the Immigration Department at Davis Brown Law Firm in Des Moines, how have the president's actions changed your work? Have they simplified it, complicated it?
Well, you know, I think that's where we start to get to the mixed actions, because you know, while DACA was a great move, there's other things that have happened, of course, the deportations, but also the way that the treatment of children and mothers coming across the border, fleeing their lives from Central America, being treated as, you know, being treated not as refugees that they were, but as people who were just breaking the immigration law. So that has created some real challenges. And, you know, I think that it just becomes more and more complex. It didn't, you know, the borders weren't open. The immigration didn't always say yes. You know, it still is a minefield sort of to navigate for people trying to immigrate to the United States. So it's really been a mixed legacy, I would say.
Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. That's the number that Joe dialed from Des Moines. Weigh in on this. I think you had a point to make. Joe, welcome to the program about immigration under President Obama.
Yeah, good to be here. Yeah, many missed opportunities for those of us in the Latino community. We see Obama being remembered for protecting 730,000 young people, but also deporting 2.4 million immigrants during his terms in office. There really were missed opportunities in his first 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Comprehensive immigration reform.
Specifically, with the Congress the way it was it really a missed opportunity, or did he just run into a brick wall there?
We strongly believe that he could have worked very hard and got past a pathway to citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
Some form of legal status. There were bills that were being put together even under the Bush administration that he could have worked on. So there were missed opportunities here. It has been devastating to us within the Latino community for our young people and our others who are undocumented immigrants to have 11 million people undocumented who do not have a pathway to citizenship after all this time. It's extremely, extremely unfortunate. So Obama will not be remembered for being successful.
Okay.
On comprehensive immigration reform.
Joe, thank you for your call from Des Moines. Let's go to Jason also. Jason in Des Moines, did I hear you hang up, or are you still there, Jason? I did hear, indeed, Jason hang up. Let's talk a little bit about that. Missed opportunities, Lori Chesser, but let's compare. You said, you know, it's been mixed. That's what you've said here in terms of immigration reform here. You've been studying and practicing immigration law for a couple decades, I understand. How does President Obama compare to other recent presidents on immigration?
Well, I think that's where people sometimes have the assumption that a Democratic president is going to be helpful on immigration and a Republican president is going to be harmful. And, in fact, in my experience, it's been really the opposite. So I would say, compared to, say, Bill Clinton, I would say he probably did better. But compared to, say, the first George Bush, he wasn't nearly as helpful. And I think the second George Bush, had events not overtaken him, as our last caller said, was working toward immigration reform pretty hard. So again, I think it's a mixed bag, and I think from your previous caller, I think that is a good statement of how many people that I know view it as a missed opportunity that, you know, he could have used his persuasive abilities better. I think that is a good summary.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, to what extent do you believe the election of Donald Trump, who started his whole campaign with the inflammatory language about immigrants, to what extent is that a referendum on Obama's immigration policies, do you believe, Lori?
Well, I think it's probably a referendum more on the inability to communicate and to lead on immigration, maybe not so much his policies, because I think the policy, you know, when you get into policy, you start to get into sort of this more nitty gritty that doesn't really affect most voters everyday life. But when you get into, you know, the leadership and the communication about it, I think that it unfortunately wasn't done as well as it could have been, and that left voters frustrated and confused about the system. Whereas, you know, it's a driver in our country, in our economy, in our culture. You know, it's been a great thing for the United States, and so it was sad to see it go in that direction. And I guess I do have some concern about how that was done in this administration.
Mm-hmm. As the baton will soon be handed off in 10 days' time from President Obama, to a President Trump. Do you know, you must have your eyes on it and then some keen questions about what Donald Trump will likely do to the immigration work that Barack Obama has done. Will he be able to reverse it? What will happen, to the best of your knowledge?
Well, I wish I had some more view into that. You know, we certainly assess the risks that are out there, but my hope is that when the Trump administration becomes more familiar with how the system actually works and why things are the way they are, that they will see the, you know, the benefits of some of the good things that have been happening. And I also hope that, being the pragmatist that I believe Donald Trump is, that he will see the, you know, the real benefit that immigration brings to the United States and not try to undermine that, but to harness that to continue to drive our economy, continue to create jobs, continue to enliven our culture. So I'm hoping for the best. But, you know, certainly that's going to depend on who he chooses to run the particular programs. And we're watching that very closely and with some concern.
Lori, before we let you go, what's at stake for Iowa specifically, since you work in Iowa at a law firm with immigration?
Well, you know, I heard the one of the incoming leaders in the Iowa Senate, I believe it was yesterday, say that what will solve Iowa's problems is growth, growth, and growth. And I agree with that. And for the last couple of decades, at least, most of our growth population-wise has been due to immigration. And our growth economically has depended a lot on that as well. So I think what's at stake for Iowa is, are we going to continue to grow and continue to be a magnet for people to come from other states and to, you know, continue our upward spiral that we're on? So I think it's a really critical issue for Iowa.
And to sum up in the few seconds that we have left, to sum up your words on President Obama's immigration legacy, what would it be if you could give us one or two sentences?
That's a hard one, but I guess I would say that we would have liked to have seen more, but we do appreciate the commitment to a diverse, maintaining a diverse nation that we saw.
Okay, you put you under pressure there at the end. Lori Chesser, thanks for the final words. Chair of the Immigration Department at Davis Brown Law Firm in Des Moines. Lori, thanks for joining us this hour.
My pleasure.
Also with us this hour, Jessica Welburn. She'll stay with us until the second half hour. Assistant Professor of Sociology and African American Studies at the University of Iowa. Coming up also, we'll be joined by Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa. Yes, one of our regular political scientists. We'll be talking about President Obama's legacy. What do you have to say on that matter? What words of goodbye do you have for our current president for another 9 or 10 days? Are you bidding him a fond farewell or saying good riddance and glad to be moving on? 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. I'm Ben Kiefer, back with more of River to River in just a moment. We're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tonight, President Obama gives his farewell address. We will cover it live here on Iowa Public Radio, asking you this hour as we look into the Obama legacy at this early time. Usually legacies are kind of reserved later in history, but what 6 words would you use to say goodbye to President Obama? Join us on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. In just 10 days, the presidency of Barack Obama will end. In many ways, you can say his launch to the presidency began here in Iowa when he had a surprise victory over Hillary Clinton in the Iowa caucuses in early 2008. Joining us this hour, Jessica Welburn, Assistant Professor of Sociology and African American Studies at the University of Iowa. In just a minute, Donna Hoffman will be with us. But one point I wanted to ask you about, Jessica, is President Obama is called our first black president. But on The View, on the television program The View, in July 29th of 2010, President Obama was asked by Barbara Walters, why he doesn't delineate himself as biracial. His mother is white, Caucasian. Why he doesn't delineate himself as biracial when people call him a black president.
Part of what I realized was that if the world saw me as African-American, then that wasn't something that I needed to run away from. That's something that I could go ahead and embrace. And the interesting thing about the African-American experience in this country is that we are sort of a mongrel people. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all kind of mixed up.
Yeah.
And now, that's actually true for white America as well, yeah. But we just yeah. know more about it.
Yeah.
And so I'm less interested in how we label ourselves. I'm more interested in how we treat each other. And if we're treating each other right, then I can be African American, I can be multiracial, I can be you name it. What matters is, am I showing people respect? Am I caring for one for other people?
President Obama in 2010. Jessica Wilburn, what do you think of that response?
Well, I think that what President Obama is getting at in that clip is that the United States is still very much a one-drop society. It means that essentially if you are a part person of color, part African-American or something else, oftentimes you're perceived as a racial minority. And a lot was made when the census actually allowed people to select more than one race on their census forms. And then we found that the overwhelming majority of people still do not select more than one race on the census. Most people identify primarily with one race. Again, and I think it speaks to the fact that if you are a person of color, people see you as a member of that group. If you're African American, if you're part African American, people identify you as African American and treat you as such. And so when President Obama walks down the street, people see him as an African American male. And he's talked a lot about, you know, the impact that has on his daily experiences and how he has been received by other people. And so, again, that's the way the U.S. categorizes people.
Mm-hmm. And yet he's received criticism earlier on in his presidency that he wasn't black enough, so to speak. I think that's faded a little bit now. But what was behind that? Because of his upbringing?
Well, I think a lot of times in the U.S., we do fall into this trap of believing that the black experience is monolithic, again, that it's what we see on the news or stereotypes that we see on television, and we often do not do a good job of talking about the diversity of the experiences of African Americans. Of late, I think because in part the Obamas have been in the White House, we have been more successful at talking about the complexity of black life in America and the fact that African Americans come from many different backgrounds, have many different types of jobs, many different types of, you know, experiences and life goals. But that's not always the image that people have. So I think that's part of that criticism. And this is, you know, something that's come up consistently over time, this need to say, well, this person's not black enough because they don't, you know, talk like this or act like this. And really, these are stereotypes, I think, that white America has created of black Americans that, you know, President Obama has worked to dispel.
Mm-hmm. Jessica Wilburn with us, if you just joined us, Assistant Professor of Sociology and African-American Studies at the University of Iowa, giving us her view on the many facets of what we can see so far from the Obama legacy 10 days before his administration ends. Donna Hoffman is with us now, joining us by phone, Associate Professor and Head of the Department of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Hello, Donna.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You've been with us listening for a few minutes. Tell us, from your perspective as a political scientist, how much of Barack Obama's legacy can we assess at this point?
Not a whole lot. Of course, that's not going to stop us from doing it, and especially right. the media will, you know, be engaging in kind of this cottage industry of talking about Obama's legacy for the next several months. But, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's important for us to recognize that it is too early for us to see that legacy as gelling quite yet. And we also need to, and the reason why that is we need to understand that what happens with any one president's legacy, first of all, is dependent upon what comes next. And so, what comes next in terms of what scholars do, in terms of getting into the archives and digging in, what comes next in terms of the administration that comes after. And especially with Obama, we are seeing a president-elect who campaigned on rolling back various aspects of what is slated to be Obama's legacy. How will those efforts go? So, for example, we might take the Affordable Care Act. Donald Trump was very upfront in terms of, and Republicans, since, you know, the Affordable Care Act passed, have been very upfront about trying to roll that back, trying to repeal it, if you will. And there are already on Capitol Hill questions about should we just repeal it and then replace it later? Should we repeal and replace it at the same time? And the history of big policy pushes, which the Affordable Care Act was, is that there typically are incremental changes. And we'll see what happens with the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
But I can imagine a scenario where there might even be some large-scale changes. There might even be some smaller-scale changes. It might be repealed as well. But if there are just some incremental changes, some tweaks to it, because there are aspects of it that are very popular with the American public, that it will still be called Obamacare, for example. And the history of, say, Social Security was that it was a kind of a small bore plan at first, and it grew and it grew and it grew, and now it's one of the most popular programs that we have. So time lends perspective here, but what comes after also affects one's legacy.
Let's go back in time, Donna, to March 23rd of 2010, President Obama making a speech before signing the what is known as the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. We've come to know it as Obamacare. It got that name. It was embraced by President Obama, that name, a while after. But let's listen to it being signed and the portion of the speech that he made as he signed it. The applause in this section has been shortened.
Today, after all the votes have been tallied, health insurance reform becomes law in the United States of America. Today. You know, it is fitting that Congress passed this historic legislation this week. For as we mark the turning of spring, we also mark a new season in America. In a few moments, when I sign this bill, all of the overheated rhetoric over reform will finally confront the reality of reform.
Okay, March 23rd, 2010, the signing of the Affordable Care Act. So, Donna Hoffman, some are perhaps surprised in what you just said before that clip, that the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is yet to be determined. It won't be wiped from the face of the earth.
Well,
possibly.
Obamacare means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, and there are aspects of it that are really popular. For example, the pre-existing conditions that insurance companies can't deny you coverage for pre-existing conditions. That's part of Obamacare. That children 26 and under can stay on their parents' insurance. That's part of Obamacare. That's also really popular. The unpopular aspects are also in Obamacare. And so the framing of anything, you know, you mentioned that Barack Obama embraced what was, you know, supposed to be a derogatory term, Obamacare, and he ended up embracing it. There will still be people who talk about it in that way, that will talk about it as Obamacare, is my prediction. Now, again, it could be something totally different, but what history tells us about policy change in this country is that it oftentimes is incremental. It usually is incremental. When there are big policy pushes, like the Affordable Care Act, there are always changes that come to it. So the big question is, what do those changes look like and how are they framed? And it could be that the Republicans, who have pretty small majorities in the Senate, especially where it's really important, it could be that the whole-scale change that Donald Trump ran on is not possible. You know, one of the things to think about with Obama's legacy is there are people who support him that are disappointed in him. For example, there are a lot of progressives who say, oh, why didn't we get the public option when we had the numbers in the House and in the Senate to get, you know, health care reform? The public option was not possible. Politics is the art of the possible. And over time, these recollections, when we go back and look at what Obama did, that he was able, after Harry Truman had proposed it, after Lyndon Johnson had even made some inroads but had proposed national health care, that Obama actually moved the ball further down the court, not to the public option, as some progressives want, but further down the court. And so what happens next is going to color how we think of that. And typically we forget some of the bad things and we remember some of the good things. And one of the other things that we know as political scientists about presidential legacies is they tend to improve. So, for example, over time, modern presidents in particular, so we might think about Dwight Eisenhower. Today he is thought of as one of those iconic good presidents of the Cold War. When he was in office, he wasn't as popular as we might expect him to have been. The common characterization of people about Eisenhower is he is always off playing golf. It was later when some political scientists, Fred Greenstein in particular, started looking in the archives and at what Eisenhower was doing. He presented this persona of being relatively disengaged, but studies afterwards showed that he was actually quite engaged. This book was called The Hidden Hand Presidency. And Eisenhower's estimation has risen and risen and risen. And so a couple of years ago, political scientists got together and did a survey in terms of presidential legacies, and Eisenhower had cracked the top 10. Bill Clinton had also cracked the top 10. Obama was ranked at 18. Obama is leaving office relatively popular. His approval today, I checked it on Gallup this morning, is at 55%. That's one of the higher points in his second term. And typically we see presidents, and when we look back on them, get more popular, and that means we typically think of their legacies more positively. Now, can there be changes to that? Yes. The other thing we want to think about, though, with Obama is that he's young. He's 55. He has a post-presidency period looming before him, much like Jimmy Carter did. Jimmy Carter's estimation has risen with the public as well, and part of that is due to how he has behaved and how he has acted during his post-presidency period. He has engaged in humanitarian works. He's been very active and very much in the public eye in a lot of different ways, going to countries and making sure that their electoral progress has integrity, those kinds of things. He was able to help shape that and define that. Obama is going to be able to do the same thing. So we will see him, I'm sure, write his memoirs. That's something that presidents do. He was also, you know, an author before he became president as well. He will be able to talk about, as all recent presidents have done, his perspective on his presidency, what he thinks his legacy is, the things that he wishes he would have done differently, the opportunities, that kind of thing, the experiences, the, you know, interesting asides and those kinds of things. But he can also, with his actions, do other things, and he's already signaled some of the things that he wants to do, helping the Democratic Party, helping to nurture new candidates to come into the electoral process. His My Brother's Keeper initiative that he started as president is something that he signals he wants to do, lending his personal prestige to various aspects of Democratic politics to various candidates. So we don't expect him to do what George W. Bush did, because presidents have a choice here. George W. Bush, as he left office, went to Texas, and we haven't heard a whole lot from him. That's his choice. Obama seems to be choosing a different path for his post-presidency period. He'll be putting his library together, foundation that goes along with that. And we, at this point, he signaled we expect him to be fairly active in that regard.
Donna Hoffman is with us, associate professor, head of the Department of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. We have just a few minutes, Donna. I want to get to a couple more points here. Switch to as we evaluate President Obama's legacy, even before his office term in office ends, to the extent that we can. Let's switch quickly to foreign policy. He will be perhaps best known for this. On May 1st, 2011, President Obama addressed the nation to announce Osama bin Laden had been killed.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of al-Qaeda, and a terrorist who's responsible for the murder of thousands of innocent men, women, and children.
Donna, how will Barack Obama be seen in terms of foreign policy?
I think he's going to have a mixed legacy in terms of foreign policy, but again, it depends on what happens, primarily in the Middle East, by and large. But those problems in the Middle East, which we've been dealing with for decades, if not even longer than that, are fairly intractable. And the way that he dealt with them was different than the way George W. Bush dealt with them. And I think they're going to be different from the way President-elect Trump will deal with them. But these problems are going to continue to go on. And that may paint Obama in a more positive light as we go down the road. It may paint him in a more negative light in terms of he was very cautious. He was very pragmatic in terms of foreign policy. Again, progressives sometimes criticize him for the move to drone warfare. Other people criticize him for not being as active in the region that they want to. And so with the foreign policy area, I think there's going to be some mixed results there. But certainly he wanted to move to the Pacific region to kind of reorient American foreign policy. again, that also has some questions in terms of what happens with the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership deal that was a piece of that that, again, Donald Trump specifically ran against in his campaign for president. And so with foreign policy, I think we'll see probably a more mixed legacy, but again, still subject to revision as his legacy on domestic policy will be as well.
Rob tweeted us, Rob is listening, tweeting us his six words to say goodbye to President Obama. I guess more of a summation, according to Rob, on in this tweet: calm, reasoned, visionary, steadfast, honorable, patriot. On our both, you can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave your six-word or less summation of President Obama's time in office. One other hallmark, I guess, that has to be mentioned here. I know you want to mention this, Donna. We have not. Or is there? Has there been a single scandal connected to this president in 8 years?
There hasn't. And some might hold out the Benghazi and some things that happened in Hillary Clinton's State Department, but those were primarily directed at Hillary Clinton. And they did not taint the Obama administration for most of the public. And so we did not see any scandals that you typically do get in the 4 to 8 years of a presidential administration, especially over a two-term presidential administration. And again, I think that goes back to what the tweet that you just read, or the comments that you just read, that he was no drama Obama. And he projected this notion of pragmatism, of calm, and that did have some effect filtering down into the way that the White House was run, the other aspects of the administration. And I think it's a really pretty singular in recent history that we've had an administration like Obama's that hasn't had any kind of big scandal that's required congressional investigation, that's gone on and on and on. Now, again, people will disagree in terms of the kinds of – because there were some scandals, but they didn't touch the Obama administration. There were, again, the Clinton investigations. And so I think that's really quite remarkable with the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm. Jessica Welburn, jump in here on that point perhaps, as a sociologist.
Sure, yes, I agree. It's quite amazing that President Obama really hasn't had any significant scandals. And I do think in part it's connected to him being the first African-American president. I think he definitely has been conscious of the fact that he has had to work harder. He has faced more criticism and more scrutiny than perhaps anybody in recent history. And so there really wasn't room for him to step off of the beaten path, so to speak. He really had to, I think, have this type of presidency in order to be able to accomplish what he did.
Donna Hoffman, you mentioned a few sort of failures, I guess you would say, but are there any really moments that you would guess if you were Barack Obama and said, well, I wish I could do that over again and do it differently?
I think what we may see, and again, I would expect him to address this maybe even tonight in his farewell address, but certainly when he writes, you know, his experiences in a book on the time that he was president, that there may be some regret in terms of the way the administration was somewhat hands-off in terms of selling the Affordable Care Act, for example. Obama had a particular view. I mean, he was a constitutional law professor. He had a particular view of the proper role of the president and vis-a-vis the Congress. And when it came time for them to do the Affordable Care Act, he didn't give them a lot of really detailed things that had to go in the plan. He left it to Congress. And there was some disconnect there, I think, that I don't think the president was uninvolved, but he had a recollection of what his proper place ought to be. And the Affordable Care Act was very large. It was very complex. And I think the administration didn't do a particularly good job of, quote unquote, selling it to the American public. And that's why you have confusion about it and, you know, differing degrees of acceptance of some of it and not of other parts of it. And so, you know, using the bully pulpit to advertise, to talk, Obama was a little reticent to do some of that. And I think it stems both from his view of the office of the presidency as well as his personality. He's relatively introverted in some ways. He's, again, projects that cool, calm pragmatism. And I think there might be some regret in terms of how the administration positioned itself, and also in terms of the rollout of the Affordable Care Act as well.
Mm-hmm. Before we go, Don, I would like to know, in sizing up President Obama for his post-presidency period, do you size up no drama Obama as someone who will comment on what the next president does from time to time, or hold himself back, as President George W. Bush has certainly done in Texas.
It is actually the tradition that presidents, as they leave office, refrain from criticizing the incoming president and then the current president. There have been a few examples of where presidents have gone against this. Most notably, Carter was critical of George W. Bush at one point. We're kind of entering a new territory with the relationship, I think, between Obama and Trump. But I do think Obama really does want to try to follow tradition here. In terms of not criticizing. But as we know, the Trump administration will be directly trying to roll back various aspects of the Obama legacy. I mean, that's essentially what they're taking away from their election.
Donna,
and
yeah.
that will be important.
Donna Hoffman, we have to go. Sorry to say, Associate Professor, Head of the Department of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Thank you so much, Donna, for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And thank you, Jessica Welburn, for stepping into our studio, Assistant Professor of Sociology and African American Studies at the University of Iowa.
Thanks
thank
for
you,
having
Jessica,
me.
For your insights. River to River, produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Politics Wednesday tomorrow. Hope you'll join us for that tomorrow at noon. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.